You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Wednesday. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I said Wednesday twice. I never do that. Today we're going to talk Sixers, the team the Pacers play on national TV a bunch of times this year, the only team they play multiple times. So perhaps the beginning of a rivalry starts tonight. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. And on the other line, I the first guy to introduce you is this with the Athletic Philadelphia and Liberty Ballers, Jackson Frank. Jackson, what's up, man?
Not much. I hate to inform you, you are the second person.
Dang.
I did a pod last week, and they those contributors to the Athletic, so they got you beat. But you're top three. You're on the medal stand.
Yes. Okay. The silver, the coolest one. It's the only one without the hints of brown. Right. It's even better. So last year, I'm gonna tweet it tomorrow. Sixers Pacers had my favorite play of the entire Pacers season. Do you know what it is?
I have to think about it, but nothing comes to mind off the top of my head.
All right, good. You'll see it tomorrow. Al Jefferson catches in the paint, turns, shot fake, Embiid goes up, spin move. Big classic, puts Embiid in the paint.
You've talked about that before. Yeah, I remember seeing that before. I think you've tweeted it a couple times. But
when I tweet clips, I always delete them right away so I don't accidentally use the wrong clip in a video. So the only video I always have saved on my desktop is that clip because I just love it so much. It's amazing. So the Sixers last year were the team that passed the Pacers right at the end to get that three seed, which would have been huge for the Pacers not playing the Cavs in the first round. This year, everybody picked the Sixers to be right above Indy, and now Milwaukee's kind of mucking up the standings in the East. But I picked Milwaukee over both of them, so I'm feeling good. But the Sixers currently have a worse record than the Pacers. Mostly thanks to not great offense this year. You want to talk about their offense and why they've been struggling more than last year?
Well, I mean, part of it is they have two guys who won't shoot or are very hesitant shooters. Obviously with Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz, and then Darius Saric has been struggling a ton. I think that's a pretty under-talked about part of their struggles. Some people have talked about a lot of riders and whatnot, but I don't know. I don't off the top of my head, but his shooting numbers are pretty awful, and so I think that's really hurting him. He's getting open looks. He's not hitting them, and that's, you apply that to 11 games, two threes or so every game. Maybe a three a game is going to change the offensive rating a fair amount. So I'd say that's a big issue. And then they are missing Ilyasova and Bellinelli to an extent. I think more so Bellinelli. I think Muscala's done a pretty good job of replicating that kind of bench big and can hit three a little bit. But yeah, I think the big thing is Simmons still doesn't really shoot outside of the paint. Fultz is more willing than Simmons, but he's not really any more effective in terms of being his floor spacer. Even if he shoots some more, it was really prevalent against the Hawks maybe a week or two ago. Lloyd Pierce kind of had the inside track and just basically abandoned Fultz when he was off the ball. So I think it's just a lack of shooting, and Sharks have struggled to a really big reason for that.
What did I see Bodner say, that Simmons is shooting like under 30% outside of 5 feet or something?
Yeah. Derek Bodner tweeted the other day that maybe it was yesterday, that Simmons is shooting like 28.6 or 28.9, and Fultz is just a tick better, like in the mid 29%. So, not a lot of effective scoring outside the paint, or even far away from the basket, I guess, for those two guys who are pretty ball dominant usually when they're on the court.
Yeah, if it weren't for Embiid being a good perimeter player, I would think that Miles Turner could just feast this game against the starters. With Simmons and Fultz coming at him, he could defend really well. But obviously, Embiid can literally do anything from anywhere. I'm actually surprised at his three-point percentage also. I think it's crazy that Fultz has a higher three-point percentage than Sarge and Embiid right now. That makes no sense to me. But I feel like Embiid's a better shooter than his numbers say. He's a good perimeter player, and that's a big matchup problem for Turner. I think last year, Turner actually played okay against the Sixers, but I worry about Embiid. I think he's been exceptional this year, and I think he's going to transform that whole offense. And I think they're going to have no problem getting to the rim because of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm in the middle of a piece about just kind of recapping / laying out how Embiid's improved this year. And the thing I've noticed is, I don't know if he's necessarily stronger than years past, but he seems to do a better job of kind of being in control of his strength. He's not turning the ball over as much. He's not forcing up shots. He's really just, he's kind of getting wherever he wants in the post methodically. And so I think, I would imagine that Turner, who's kind of notorious for being slight of frame, would struggle. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you see more of Sabonis. I mean, obviously he's not as strong as Embiid. And a lot of guys, most guys aren't, outside of Aaron Baines probably, and a couple others. But yeah, I mean, I've just been really impressed with the control Embiid showed the post. He hasn't really been prone to forcing up some shots and kind of going, trying to go through guys, which he's kind of shown to do at times his first couple of years. He's been really impressive. He's averaging like 1.1 points per possession out of post-ups this year when he's never had it above one, I think, in his career. So yeah, I mean, Embiid's a really big reason they're even above 500 because he's been incredible. If they were 7-4, 8-3, I think he'd be getting a lot more love in the MVP, early MVP race. I mean, it's really early, but yeah, he's been phenomenal.
Yeah, last year Kyrie got that early MVP buzz, and that did not shake out. That's my favorite. It's my favorite thing to look back at who gets early MVP buzz in
April. It's fun. You get all these guys that are top 10, top 15 players in the league, and usually the MVP goes to top 5 or 6 guys. So it's fun to kind of shine a light on some of those guys. But yeah, it is a kind of funny look at when you get to May or June, wherever they present the awards, and say, oh yeah, back in November, X player X was killing it and whatnot. But yeah, I think Embiid's got to be in the early discussion for sure.
So this comes with a caveat. I just learned that Robert Covington is questionable. I usually count on Basketball Reference for my injury reports. Robert Covington not on there. So tough day for Basketball Reference being on. But if he does play, I was thinking about this because I'm almost positive that Fultz is not going to guard Victor Oladipo, even though he is quote unquote the two on this team. And I think Simmons and Covington could both do an able job. I feel like it's going to be Covington. Do you feel like that's wrong, or how do you think they're going
to
go about
that? No, I'd agree. I think I've actually been a little less impressed with Simmons' defense this year to an extent at times. Part of that might be he's still a little bit of lingering back injury that cost him the Detroit game and kept him out of most of that Magic game a couple weeks ago. He just looks a little less spry, but Covington's been pretty phenomenal. Obviously, he's better off the ball, but yeah, I'd imagine they don't have a lot of true one-on-one stoppers, the Sixers. But I'd imagine Covington is going to be the guy who gets the first crack. But if it doesn't work, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Brett Brown rotate that. But yeah, Covington's been really good on both ends this year. Obviously, he has some struggles offensively, but. He's shooting, I want to say, over 40% from three. I haven't checked recently, but at 42. One point it was at 44 maybe a couple games ago. But yeah, he started off hot last year and ended at like 37% on pretty good volume. But yeah, I'd imagine Covington gets the first shot at Oladipo this year tomorrow.
You're good. It could be it's this year. It's tomorrow. It's Wednesday. You can call it whatever you want. Yeah, the other end, there's some intriguing matchups. We'll talk Pacers stuff more specifically later. But yeah, I think it's going to be Covington too, and I agree with you. I don't think he's like overrated as an on-ball defender. I just think that people talk about his defense in totality a lot.
Yeah.
He's adequate on the ball. He's really good off the ball. No, he's better than adequate. He's good on the ball, and he's very, very good off the ball.
Well, I think what helps is he's got those super quick hands, and so
yes.
He gets a lot of steals and deflections. Every game I feel like he gets one of those, kind of just strips the ball from a guy, and every time I take notes, I put it in there, and I feel like I've got – probably got that 15, 20 times already. We're not even 25% of the year into the year. 25% of the way, excuse me.
Thad Young fever, I call it. Yeah. The other thing and the last thing I really wanted to ask you about the Sixers is, and you kind of briefly touched on earlier, people were harping on the Bellinelli and Ilyasova stuff, which, first of all, they didn't even have those two guys at this point in the season last year. So stupid to compare. Anyway, depth was always talked about with this team. And then now they moved Redick to the bench, and Redick's going to have some stretch where he hits 7 threes in a row because that's how Sixers Pacers games go. But outside of him, how has the bench really looked? I know Amir Johnson's playing a lot. I know, well, not a lot, but he's played on every game. Wilson Chandler just came back. They still have Shaman, who I love, who loves Indianapolis. You know, how's the bench look for them?
Up and down, I'd say. Shaman's had some really nice moments. They're basically just deploying him as another J.J. Redick, running a lot of dribble handoffs, off screens, things like that. And he's shooting 38-39% from three now. He struggled early on in the year, and he's getting it back up there. Obviously he's going to struggle defensively, as most rookies do, especially ones that are kind of slight of frame at the two guard spot. But he plays hard defensively, which I think is important. I think as he develops, he'll be better there. But Amir Johnson's been kind of up and down as well. He's had some nights where he looks good as a rebounder and interior defender, and then provide a little bit of a bucket or here too inside. Other nights where he just gets torched in pick and roll defense and looks a little out of place. I think Mike Muscala's looked pretty good for the most part. I don't know what his offensive numbers looked like, but he definitely provided a necessary floor spacing dimension off the bench, and he's been a little more nimble and mobile than I thought on the perimeter. He gets burned by guys sometimes, but I generally think he does a pretty good job of moving his feet and contesting shots to an extent. Sometimes they go in, so I don't know what the tracking numbers look like against him at the rim, but he's looked really good. I'd say he's probably been their second best bench player. I'd say some people probably have been surprised by Shamet, but I'd say night in, night out, you know that Muscala is going to give you a three or two and play pretty solid defense or hold his own on switches, I think, is the most important thing, because they switch everything mostly, aside from dropping Embiid back a little bit or hedging him in pick and rolls. But yeah, I'd say that's the big thing. And Chandler's only played one game, gotten some foul trouble, and he was on a 10-minute limit, so we haven't seen much from him. And then we're still just waiting on Zaire Smith. I think he's going to have a pretty big role just because they don't have a lot of wing depth. But yeah, I'd say it's just been up and down. But Redick's been phenomenal all year.
Yeah, 9 attempts per game and like crazy percent from deep. Last year, the first Pacers-Sixer game, I think Miles Turner was out with a concussion. It was either his first game back or his last game out. But it was like a 3 or 4 point game about a minute ago. Redick hit 3 threes in a row and it was over all of a sudden. The double-digit game. I was like, what the hell just happened?
He hit that last one on like a scattered possession from the right wing. And I just remember the Sixers play-by-play guy, Mark Zumoff, just went crazy. And it was pretty funny. But yeah, he kind of took over on the stretch. What do you have, 8 or 9 threes in that game? I can't remember.
But
he's just been hoisting them. He gets off the bench and 2 minutes in, he's already got 4 shots or something, 3 threes up. But yeah, it's crazy and kind of scary how much their offense relies on a 34-year-old shooter. But yeah, he's been awesome and probably an early leader for 6 men in a year.
Corey Joseph's gonna be chasing him around like crazy. I imagine that they're gonna keep him in at all times, but I think the Pacers are gonna have a lot of matchup problems, and after this break I want to talk about the Pacers more than the Sixers. So I'll get to that bench thing I just referenced before the break in a moment, but I think that this game, and we saw this a bit last year but not as much, the Sixers are really a matchup nightmare for the Pacers offensively just because of Simmons' size. I have no idea who they're going to guard him with. I feel like Fultz will be guarded by Darren Collison, but then do you put Oladipo on Simmons? Now Oladipo has no energy for offense. Do you put Bojan on Simmons and just get cooked all the time? I have no idea, and I think it's going to be impossible to decide who guards who.
Yeah, no, I guess, now that I kind of think about it more, it's interesting because they don't really have a lot of modern wing, you know, they have or modern defensive wings, I guess, you know, their best defender is Oladipo and Turner and those guys don't necessarily work well against Embiid and Simmons. So yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see kind of how they handle that. But Simmons has been he's been in a weird funk. I think some of it's health related, some of it's I can't really explain, but he's ebbed and flowed. Definitely hasn't been as good as last year. He's definitely playing a role in their slow-ish start, which I think wouldn't really be a huge issue if Simmons had just played that Detroit game and they're 7-4. And I know there's issues, but I feel like some of it's maybe a little overblown. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, but I mean, they're 7-4. I don't think a lot of people would really be worried about it, but they've definitely looked weird. Simmons has played a role in that. But
how is Dario Saric's post game?
Not good. I don't know. I think he was inefficient last year by synergy numbers, and I don't think he was very good there. I don't think he's been very good to start the year. He's a tough guy because he definitely has some offensive versatility, but it's really tough to use when you have two guys who can't really play off the ball in Fultz and Simmons. You know, you can't really use Sarge as a big like passer at the elbows or even the occasional pick and roll with him as the ball handler. So it's tough. He's kind of been used as just a spot up shooter, and he's shooting atrocious percentage from everywhere on the floor, it feels like.
Yeah, if that's the case, I might be not hesitant. I might go with Thad Young on Ben Simmons and then try to not hide necessarily, that's the wrong word, but throw Darren Collison on one of Covington or Saric and then have Vic guard Fultz, really hound him with the good D, get the ball out of his hands, and then when he's off ball, roam around a bit. But it's tough. Simmons is, with his height playing point guard is a tough matchup, and I don't know how they're going to handle it. And I think he could have a good game because he'll either have a speed advantage or a size advantage on whoever is guarding him.
Yeah, no, I guess I totally just blanked on Thad Young when I was talking. I'm sure you know he's awesome, but yeah, I guess I mean How switchy is he? Man, I know I watch a few amount of fair amount of Pacers game, but you know it's tough. You don't get a ton of opportunities to see guys on the perimeter all the time. But like, how good is he against guys? You know, is he? I know he's pretty quick, but like, how's he hold his own there usually?
They have him guard Giannis every time they play, and he does pretty well at that. And I can't tell if it's because Giannis doesn't move laterally a lot, or because Thad does have the speed to keep up with guys like that who have really quick acceleration. Mm-hmm. And he never guards like the Hardens or the guards with the acceleration. So it's really hard to say. But I'm not comparing Giannis and Ben Simmons necessarily, but in that mold of the quick bursts to get to the rim, he does a pretty good job on Giannis. So I think he could be fine in that way.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, Giannis is more of the straight line speed. He just kind of comes crashing down on you. Doesn't do a lot of – he's not really going to hold the ball, run a pick and roll and jab. And I mean, he runs pick and rolls, obviously. But, yeah, I guess – I do remember seeing someone when the Pacers and Bucks play, whatever, 2 weeks ago when the Bucks blew the doors off. And there's something about how someone's tweeting about how Young's have been a pretty good defender against Giannis historically. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how McMillan matches up with that and just – and just kind of what Simmons we get, because it's been really weird. We get sometimes where he's super aggressive and looking to create his own, like he was when the Brooklyn game was close on Sunday. And there are times where he doesn't shoot the ball until 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. But that was the case last year before he kind of had that hot streak without Embiid. He got off that really, really good start. And then he had a bunch of like 7, 4, and 6 games in November and December. That was kind of maddening for a lot of Sixers fans, I know. So, I'm sure he'll be fine, but yeah, it's definitely it's kind of, you kind of forget that for as good as Simmons was last year at the end, he did have a lot of inconsistencies before the new year and even partway into the new year.
Yeah, he does. And maybe Nate McMillan will copy the Brad Stevens strategy of defending Simmons, of just pick him up full court, even if it doesn't do anything in terms of like actually slowing him down or rattling him, it just shortens the Sixers' possessions. And you know, they can only run one action fewer now, and maybe that helps, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. It helps for the Sixers, it helped for the Celtics, but the Celtics are the Celtics. Somehow the Celtics get away with stuff that I feel like every team does. It makes no sense. But it happens so often that there's clearly something to it. The other Pacers thing I wanted to focus on, I asked you about the Sixers' depth because I feel like the Pacers win a lot of games with their depth, or hang in the Rockets' case, a lot of games with their depth. And I look at Shamet McConnell, and I just see opportunities for a 6'6 Tyreke Evans and a 6'4 Corey Joseph to get a lot of points. And at the same time, I look at Amir Johnson, who is a great rebounder, but can't really move far from the rim. And Mike Muscala, and I think that the second unit offense could have a nice day for the Pacers.
No, yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think McConnell has been out of the rotation the last few games. Maybe the last couple. Maybe the last.
Are they
couple,
only going nine guys?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I'm trying. I mean, I should keep better track of this. But yeah, he hasn't really been playing. It's been Fultz, Shamet, and Redick kind of as the three actual guards, and then Simmons, whatever position you want to call him. But yeah, I mean, I could be wrong there, but I know at least the last couple games, at least the Detroit and the Brooklyn game over the weekend, he didn't get any actual meaningful minutes. I'm pretty sure. I don't want to be wrong there, but yeah, he's definitely been. But his role has always been weird. It seems like sometimes it looks like he's out of the rotation, and then he comes back in. Happened a lot last year when Fultz kind of returned. He was out of the rotation in the regular season, and then he made a run at the end of the playoffs again. But yeah, I definitely could see that being an issue for the Sixers guarding against Evans. Fultz has been better defensively the last few games, truthfully, kind of dating back to the Clippers game, more active, more aggressive. So you can definitely see some improvement there, but even then, Evans has the strength and size advantage to do some really nice things. And yeah, I would say that the Pacers definitely have a depth advantage for sure. And Sabonis is probably going to wreck some big havoc against Amir Johnson, just because he looks a step slower than last year, but if he's been able to provide some valuable minutes at times this year.
Nah, Sabonis is going to wreck havoc on whoever guards him, including JoJo. I know Embiid can actually guard him well, but Sabonis has been so good this year that I just feel like he has a chance against anybody.
What's he shooting from the field, like 72% or something? Like,
yeah, over 70%. Or it might have dropped last night, actually, after the Rockets game. I think he went like 3 or 4 of 9 last night. Yeah, down to 68.4 now. Ugh. But he was above 70.
I always got to root for Sabonis as a fellow Zag.
Zaga, yeah.
But yeah, no, he's been tremendous. I read Caitlin Cooper had a really good piece about him maybe yesterday or today. I mean, everything she writes is phenomenal for Indy Corner.
You don't justify it. That was really good when it's her. It's always good.
Yeah. But yeah, Sabonis should present, totally different context and meanings. If I say prevent some mismatches for Amir Johnson. He presents a lot of mismatches because he's been awesome this year. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But I would definitely say that tracking how the bench minutes go for each team is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It should be a good one. I'll be intrigued to see my most intriguing point of the whole game, featuring last year's Rookie of the Year and Joel Embiid and Markelle Fultz, is going to be how they try to stop J.J. Redick. Just because of that run last year at the end of that game. I mean, they probably would have won anyway. They were winning, but it was just like, it's a shot to the heart when you play a really good D and then JJ Redick just picks the ball up off the floor and scores a basket. What are you supposed to do about that? Yeah. And B, because I got so frustrated last year. I tweeted about it every game. The way they defended Korver just made me so mad in the postseason. Like, how do you lose Kyle Korver, man? You literally, that's the only job you have when you're guarding Korver, is just like touch him the whole time and they lose him and he just hits open shots. And I feel like Redick's the same elk where like somehow they lose these guys and they get open shots. So I want to know if they have somehow changed their focus on defending those shots.
Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. Those two guys. I mean, it just kind of speaks to their conditioning is insane. They're always running and Redick's always moving. And I think when you let up for a split second or something, Redick kind of hangs out by the block and then runs off a pin down or floppy action or something like that, and all of a sudden he's gone. And it's like, it seems easy. Obviously, you should have a guy that can do that, but yeah, just the movement that Redick has each game. I mean, you just watch him for three possessions, and you probably get tired. Like I get tired watching him. yeah, it's crazy to think he's almost halfway to 40, and he moves like a 21-year-old would on the court. You know, it'd be interesting to see how they track him. And the issue though is if he just is cold from the field, then and the Pacers may be dodge a bullet there, but because
yeah, and he's pretty useless at everything else.
Yeah, I've actually been surprised. He's had some nice plays where he's kind of using his shooting gravity to hit Embiid or Simmons or other guys on the roll when they run that dribble handoff action. But yeah, if he's not hitting the shots, then he doesn't have a lot of impact beyond maybe the occasional dump off on a fake shot and kick it into Embiid or Simmons on the roll. But yeah, that's definitely an interesting point to monitor for sure and see how they go about that, because it's a lot easier said than done to contain Redick off the ball.
JJ Redick blazing the world on fire with a 40% shooting from 0 to 3 feet this year. Oh boy, wouldn't want to lose him inside the arc.
Missed a couple bunnies at the rim this year that you're like, come on, JJ.
Does he have Nurkic disease and Miles Turner disease where he could dunk and he just misses a layup?
I don't know if it's that. He's just so much lower to the ground than a lot of guys that he just seems to
kind of any chance to reference Nurkic disease I take these days. I think that's like my seventh time in 2 weeks of
as a Blazers fan, that hurts my heart, but yeah, you know,
but yeah, I agree with you.
Rough to watch.
If Redick's cold, that's huge. I mean, then the bench just will dominate. I mean obviously, allegedly, but I feel like the bench will just dominate if he's not there. And last bit on Korver Redick, what are we, 2-3 weeks away before their teammates?
I think for the Sixers' sake, yeah, hopefully it's something like that. They could definitely use it.
If all it takes is Korkmaz, I feel like you have to do that trade yesterday.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Korkmaz just doesn't really seem content with his role. He talked about he wanted to play more, and it wasn't. Well, I watched the clip they had, and I think it was maybe made a little bigger than it needed to be. He was just, someone asked him, "Did he think he deserves a bigger role?" And he said he wanted a bigger role, and thought maybe he earned it. And he never really got a shot last year being injured. And I don't think it was anything. There was no dysfunction between Korkmaz and the franchise. But guy wants to play, and he probably would get a better shot on a rebuilding team rather than the one who said their goal is to make the NBA Finals, which. Maybe feels pretty far-fetched at this point, but more power to them for being confident in their outlook for the year. But yeah, if it's Korkmaz and a second rounder or something, I think you do that 2 weeks ago. Right? I mean, it's clear how much they need space the floor for Embiid and Simmons.
Yeah, let's take one last shortest break, and then we'll do a short segment predicting the final score that we will get horribly wrong.
What's Indiana's? How's their defense holding up? I meant to look at it, but obviously my computer's
like their defensive rating, or
yeah,
my general thoughts on the Pacers defense.
I guess both.
They are top 10 in defense. I don't know their exact D rating. It's like one of six ish.
Yeah, I mean that works for me. How do you think? How do you think it's held up?
Yeah, they archaic is totally the wrong word. Like it's a modern defense, but I don't like drop coverage very much personally. I just hate giving guys space, even if it's space on a bad shot. Like you're either giving them speed or giving them time to assess the situation, and it works. Like clearly their defense is very good. They stop the other team. They hold other stars not named James Harden to bad games. I'm looking at you, Damian Lillard. So they do things and it works, but something in my head just like doesn't click all the way. Against the Sixers, I think it'll work. I think Embiid is the perfect guy to do drop against. And Simmons, to be honest. Actually, Simmons is literally textbook drop coverage on this guy every time. And they only switch like size, which in the starting lineup is pretty much nobody. But on the whole team, there's a few guys that you can get away with it. So they are a good defensive team in a system that I don't personally like, but that should not get in my way of saying that they are a good defense.
I like the idea of switching with like size, because I think that's something the Sixers really need to do. I tweeted maybe a couple weeks ago that they just have too many negative or undersized defenders to switch everything, and you see it so often with the Sixers. And in theory, you have guys like Simmons and Covington and Embiid who can call all kind of defend three or four positions, but they have guys like Redick and Shamet and Fultz and Saric who can just get kind of buried. So I think selective switching would be a better option for the Sixers, because it's clearly not quite working right now for them. But yeah, drop coverage, it just seems so weird, because you know you get Oladipo loves drop coverage. I mean, specifically, he likes the mid-range, even if it's not a super efficient shot. In theory, it's an open jumper in rhythm is pretty it's a pretty good shot for guys.
Yeah, some Pacers fans just cringe hearing you say that, but I agree. I think it's a good shot. It is what it is. But yes, two good defensive teams. And am I wrong? Are the Sixers playing slower than last year? Isn't their pace not crazy high this year?
I haven't looked at the numbers. I'm clearly very. I will
click the back button on my old. They are. Oh, they're sixth. Excuse me. Never mind. The Pacers play slow. So I like to go lower scoring on these, especially with two good defensive teams. And in Baker's life, where the Pacers have a better chance to dictate the speed, I think we're going to end up with another 90s or low hundreds scoring game.
Yeah, I'm a Blazers fan, so I got to watch Newt McMillan coach a team for, what was it, 5 or 6 years. And he definitely likes to keep things slow. He let Andre Miller run the show for
the professor.
Two and a half years. Nothing wrong with Andre. I mean, dude dropped when he was a Blazer. I don't have any issue with him. He put him in today's NBA. He's gonna have a move at 75. He pays at 75 or something like that. But
Ish-mish with no speed.
Yeah. He also had a little bit of that post game, so I have to give him that. Pay respects to his. Probably scored 20 of his 52 points against Dallas from the post. But yeah, I would definitely err on the side of lower scoring, just because the Sixers' offense hasn't been great, and their defense always has the potential to be impactful and be stingy, even if it hasn't been great this year. I think they're somewhere in the mid teens, maybe 15th or so in terms of defense. As I said before, I clearly need to go on NBA.com and just absorb all those stats in the coming days. Generally, I like to, for some reason, I have a rule of thumb. I like to wait about 15 games until I really look into that stuff, because I think that gives you enough of a sample size to kind of read into some things. At the tangent, but yeah, I would say I'm a bet Redick does this thing again, so I'm gonna say somewhere in the mid hundreds. Okay. If I had to give an official prediction, I mean, they're 0-5 on the road. I have a tough time seeing a lot of things change, and the Pacers are good, and the Pacers seem to be playing pretty well for the most part this year. I would say I'm going to go 108-100 Indiana.
Nice. You're going to get invited back. <laughs> For that one. It's a shame, because I have a lot of Sixers guys, and I feel bad like having a pick. But anyway, my reasoning for I was also going to pick Indiana was going to be that the Pacers are third in the league in forcing turnovers this year, over 15 a game. And for those of you that didn't catch this or see the after stats, the Sixers had a ridiculous amount of turnovers.
Oh my goodness.
28 was the final number, correct?
I think it was 28, and I tweeted out some stat with like 2 minutes to go that I think at one point late in the fourth quarter, the Sixers and Nets were shooting the same percentage from the field, but the Nets were up by 24 because they had like 35 more shots from the field. And it was just absurd. I kind of thought more people would gravitate toward that stat, but it was pretty crazy how careless they were with the ball. But I think they've been better beyond that one game, and I think part of that was their fifth game, 7 nights. Had to travel to Brooklyn second out of back to back too. They've been better, but yeah, Simmons had some sloppy plays this year, and that's kind of who he is. He's going to take some risks as a passer, but. But yeah, I would say if a team that's going to be forced a lot of turnovers are playing the Sixers, then they're probably going to have some success. And obviously, if Oladipo can get out of transition, he's pretty effective there for the most part. So I'd be interested to see that. But I imagine we'll see at least one Robert Covington strip steal of Victor Oladipo.
If
he plays,
I'll take the under.
Take the under there. 0.5 is the over under.
I'll take the under.
You gotta give me an official score. I gave you 100 Pacers.
So the Rockets just came in and Harden had 28 and the Rockets had 98. If Harden is playing that well and only scoring 98 for his whole team, I am going with a lower score than you. I'm going to go with 102-96 Pacers.
I give the Sixers a few more points because I think Embiid's probably gonna have a pretty big day. Didn't get a ton of shots up against Brooklyn, and seemed
like I think
he was a little frustrated by that. And obviously, that doesn't necessarily doesn't mean they're going to score 110 points or anything just because Embiid's going to score most of his points in the paint. It's not going to hit 7 threes on you or anything. So, I just think they're going to do enough to get over the 100 barrier. But I mean, 100 is not a ton of points in today's NBA. So we're splitting hairs 196. It's not really, it's not probably going to be a blazing offensive showing from either team, but it should be fun. These two teams are going to probably battle out most of the year in the standings. I think from what we've seen from the Sixers, at least right now, they don't quite seem to be in that same tier as Milwaukee, Boston, or Toronto. I hesitate to even put Boston there right now. I mean, I think they're going to get there, but what we've seen from those two teams just seem to be a notch above everyone else. But I wouldn't be surprised if this was the 4-5 matchup in April, and that'd be a pretty fun series. But we'll get.
I agree.
Do they have three games this year or four? I can't remember. It's like four times.
Every game they play is on national TV, so I think they only have three.
Only three? Yeah. Yep. I guess we get three chances, and this should be fun. I love watching Victor Oladipo. He's just a joy to watch. I feel like most people would like watching Victor Oladipo, but it should be fun to watch him do battle three times this year, maybe 10 total. Maybe we get a 7-game series, something fun like that.
Nobody watches the Pacers outside of Indiana, so they are impune to the cycle of like stars getting good and then getting hated. So like people tune in to watch Vic once a month, and everybody loves him all the time. It's great.
Vic's awesome.
He is
super fun to watch.
Mitchell's getting turned on to start this year, right? Like Vic's next.
Who's watching the Jazz though? Like, if no one's watching the Pacers, who's watching the Jazz? Apparently,
I'm watching. My guy.
Well, no, I mean, no, I, you are obviously, but I mean, I don't think a lot of casual fans are tuning in to watch the Jazz play every night. Nothing against the Jazz; they're fun to watch, but it's a smaller market. But, I don't think Mitchell did himself any favors with that whole not a rookie campaign. But I'm sure he didn't spearhead that. To be fair, I think that's probably an Adidas thing. But I don't really care. I didn't really care one way or the other. It didn't matter. But it has been kind of weird to see people turn on Donovan Mitchell. But hats off to some Twitter. They led that charge this summer. The anti Donovan Mitchell crusade.
the
pro Devin Booker crusade. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Hey.
Which is probably their slogan at this point.
Oh man, Devin Booker, what a player! We could talk more about him, but I have to do stuff that isn't podcasting, and
I'm going to
promote your Twitter and what you're working on.
So you can follow me on Twitter at @JackFrank_JJF. Right now, I'm working on a piece of just kind of hashing out Embiid's improvements on both sides of the ball. should be up. Hopefully, hoping to get it finished by tonight. I can pretty much guarantee I will get it up by tonight. Whether or not that means I sleep is another story. But other than that, nothing really in the works. That's what I got going right about right now about Embiid being a total monster on both sides of the ball.
I'm excited to read it. I like Joel Embiid. Call me a hipster NBA fan, but I like him. Everybody followed Jackson. There was like a good year period where I was holding Jackson off in the follower count, but those days are long gone. I'm like 500 in the red now, but that's all we got for today. I think it's me on the recap tonight. I don't remember. I'll have to text Adam because I'm lazy. But I think it's me, and he'll be previewing Friday's game against Miami. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you tomorrow.